Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And guys, I'll be honest, I didn't think the show was going to get off the ground this week. I was sitting down here in the studio, just getting everything going, getting my notes ready to go and getting the equipment all going. All of a sudden, all the lights on my mixer lit up and I got a lot of feedback through the headset. It was just around my shoulders, on my neck. Then some smoke started coming out of the back of it. Quickly just shut the power bar off and unplugged everything. It didn't get like too smoking hot or something. I have no idea what happened, but fortunately the gear seems to be okay. I'm okay. Not that I was ever in any danger, but certainly a bit of a strange going on here. Some ghosts in the machine or something. And I've been podcasting now since fall of 2013 now, I guess. So going on 6.5 years at least, so, you know, several hundred episodes that I've done out of this studio here in my basement, both on this show and my soccer show from the back line. And I've never seen anything like that. I've had my fair amount of issues with software and guests not being where they're supposed to be whenever I've done an interview, things like that. You know, you kind of occasionally things like that happen. But I never expected to have that little moment. But hey, it's we look like we're good to go here. So let's just get right into it, and let's not tempt fate. And anyways, today is Valentine's Day, the 14th of February, 2020, and that means we are now 27 days away from FP1 at the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. It is now officially less than a month away from the start of the 2020 Formula One World Championship, and I certainly can't wait for that to get started. Anyways, we do have a bit of bad news to start the show this week, and this is, well, it comes as no surprise really, but Formula One confirmed earlier this week that the Chinese Grand Prix, which was scheduled for April 19th, is going to be postponed due to ongoing concerns about the coronavirus in China. I think that this is going to be a good idea. Obviously, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of people set to descend on the Shanghai International Circuit over the course of the entire race weekend. And, well, I mean, it really isn't letting up, and people's health and safety is number one concern. And it's going to be, well, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they're going to be able to reschedule that. But there is a four-week break between the Vietnamese Grand Prix on April 5th and the Dutch Grand Prix on May 3rd. So we're going to get... we're going to get an early break this year, which is unfortunate. This is the first Grand Prix that has been postponed since Bahrain in 2011, and that was canceled due to civil unrest. So we will see whether or not they can reschedule that. Formula One has said it's going to be rather challenging. I mean, it's pushed to the limit as it is this year. We're going to have we were scheduled to have 22 races this year. But Chase Carey, the CEO of Formula One, had the following to say: "It's challenging. We've started to wrestle with contingencies, but I think once you're into the year with the dates all locked, it's a pretty full schedule. We value our Chinese partners. They've been good partners. We've had good growth in China, so certainly we'd like to maintain that. The health and safety of people come first. There certainly would be challenges in fitting things into a schedule. Moving other dates when they've had these dates locked in has its complexities to it. We're dealing with it. We haven't really worked through all the possibilities, but I think there'll be challenges to dealing with it." So yeah, it really is going to be difficult. I'd hate to see it canceled outright, but you know, ultimately Chase has it right on the money there when he says that the health and safety of people, it always comes first. And that goes for fans, people in Formula One themselves, people working at the circuit. You just have to look at the bigger picture. Anyways, still sticking on with this same thread for just a moment more. McLaren have vowed to protect their staff as the virus focus now shifts to Vietnam. Obviously, just after the Chinese Grand Prix has been canceled, the Vietnamese Grand Prix, which is scheduled to go on April 5th. And this is going to be the inaugural Vietnamese Chinese Grand Prix in Hanoi. And of course, geographically speaking, Vietnam, well, borders on China, and geographically, Hanoi is not really all that far away from Wuhan, but it's far enough. It's a long, long way. But of course, it is a lot closer. And again, you have to take all these things into consideration. But Zach Brown, the CEO of McLaren, was saying at their car launch earlier this week, quote, "Obviously, the well-being of McLaren in the greater world is of the utmost importance. Vietnam has not been raised yet as a potential issue, but obviously it's very nearby and neighboring, so we're going to monitor the situation. We definitely would not like to do anything that would put our people at risk. I don't think Formula One would as well, so I'd like to thank the rest of the world. We've just got to monitor the situation." So yeah, hopefully that the Vietnamese Grand Prix doesn't get canceled. It'd be a real shame, but again, have to look at the bigger picture. And it would be really strange to see it all get brushed off there, because as it is scheduled right now, Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on, that might not be completely free of some turmoil on its own. But that's set to go from the 12th to 15th of March. Bahrain follows up from the 19th to the 22nd of March, you know, so back to back. Vietnam is the 2nd to the 5th of April. And then, well, China was supposed to be in the middle there from the 16th to the 19th of April. Obviously, that's off the calendar right now. Whether or not that comes back later in the year remains to be seen. And then the Dutch Grand Prix kind of kicking off the Europeans part of the season a little bit earlier than usual, and that is set to go from the 30th of April, which is fairly fitting because it's Koninginnedag, or the Queen's Day in Holland. So April 30th to the 3rd of May, and then Spain, Monaco, Azerbaijan, and well, it's always a little bit weird the way that you have the Europeans season and how Canada fits into that, because you go Azerbaijan at Baku City at the beginning of June, then over to Canada in the middle of June, and then back to France, Austria, Britain, and Hungary, and then that brings us to the summer break. So it is a very, very full schedule, and whether or not they can slot that Chinese Grand Prix back in later in the year remains to be seen. And well, certainly we hope that the coronavirus is that situation all gets sorted out and is over sooner rather than later, and you know, the outbreak is contained. But well, hopefully, just from a sporting point of view, that that Vietnam is also not affected, and or anywhere else in the world. Anyways, let's talk about some car launches now. That's we're in that time of year, and we've had several launches this year. Kicked off with Ferrari earlier this year, but I'm just going to stick with the McLaren because we're just talking about Zach Brown, and I think that that's a good place just to pick up there. And the MCL35, nice looking car. And well, let's just put it this way: the cars that have come out this week, we've seen the Renault, we've seen the Red Bull, Ferrari had their official launch. Renault had a launch without a car, which is a little bit bizarre, but hey, well, whatever works, I suppose. And McLaren, and as expected, nothing too radical compared to what we've seen last year. I mean, the regulations are frozen for 2020, so obviously we're not going to see anything radically different. I mean, the cars very much look very similar to last year. Ferrari have gone for a completely different philosophy, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But the McLaren, again, they're right out there in front. They're ready to get going, ready to get testing. And again, I think this is just another indication of this is a team that has finally turned things around and is finally going in some good directions. And like I say, it's a nice looking car. Anyways, James Key, who's the technical chief at McLaren, had the following to say, quote, "You have to have a target to work on because you kind of need to figure out where you need to be. One of those is to get to the front, but that's a huge step compared to where we are now. To do that in a year would be a very welcome but a massive step. There were certain targets based on what we learned last year where we found our weaknesses were that we were really wanted to address. And we could see some of those weaknesses were quite similar across the teams we were competing with. When you look at the bigger three teams, so we've been looking closely at these kinds of areas and we've made some progress there. I think that in the medium term target is to maintain our position, hopefully close the gap a bit and build on that. So if we can be in that place, I think we'll achieve the realistic target that we have." And I think that that's very much, I think what I'm expecting to see from McLaren this year is just a consolidating built on where they were last year. I think last year was a very positive year for them. And again, like Keith said, they are still quite a ways off the big three teams of Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull, but so is everybody else. But I think that if McLaren can consistently get their cars into Q3 in qualifying, if they can continue to score points, not with just one car, but both cars over the course of the weekend on race day, I think that would be a great move for or a great result for them, because last year was finally a very positive year for them. I mean, you could go back several years now, back to the 3-year partnership that they had with Honda and just how painful that was. And then the first year with Renault Power was, you saw a little bit of it, but last year was a real concrete move forward. And then this year, it is going to be a funny year because everybody is really looking towards next year. I mean, 2021, everything's just thrown out the window. It's all going to be completely new for everybody. So again, as we've talked about on this show several times over the past several weeks, since the regulations have been finalized and set in stone for 2021, it's just, when are some of the teams going to decide to basically call it a day, if you want to call it that, or name it that, and just start focusing more on next year rather than really developing the car this year as maybe they would have done in previous years, because next year being so radically different that everybody's going to have to put a lot of work in to get those cars to the track. But anyways, the MCL 35 looks like a very, very nice car. Honestly, I haven't had a lot of chance to really look at the new cars too much in detail this year. This week, just another crazy, crazy week over here, but good to see the McLarens got theirs out and all ready to go. Anyways, Ross Brawn, the director of motorsport at Formula One, had to say earlier this week that he feels that McLaren needed to end their partnership with Honda a couple of years ago to find out their own faults. And, well, like I was saying just now, that they had a 3-year partnership, 2015 to 2017. It was just not good now, was it? And, you know, when I heard several years ago, and I think many of you probably thought the same things, especially people of my generation grew up with McLaren Honda way back in the day, Senna, Prost, and just how dominant that they were in the 1980s and the early 1990s. Well, long before they switched to Mercedes powered cars with, say, David Coulthard and then Mika Hakkinen, Kimi Raikkonen, you know, the late 1990s, early 2000s. I mean, beautiful cars as well. But I mean, going back earlier, you had the MP44, MP46. I mean, just some beautiful cars and just dominant in their day. So when I heard that they'd agreed to renew that partnership again, I must admit I was really salivating at the thought of seeing a McLaren and Honda get back together and maybe see a renaissance or see a modern version of that partnership that they had way back in the day. Unfortunately, it didn't come out to pass, and after only a couple of years, McLaren decided to get out at the first opportunity that they had, and I think it cost them, I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but the number 100 million sticks in my head. And I don't know if that's dollars or pounds, but regardless, whatever it was, the first opportunity they had to break that contract, they did. I mean, it was difficult. And you can make the argument or make the comment or observation that that maybe they jumped a little bit soon, now that you see that, you know, what they've done with Red Bull in just 1 year. But that's maybe a little bit of a simplistic way to look at it. Honda, they did have that 1 year where they really put a lot of development into the engine in 2018, and that's when they there was that whole bizarre scenario with Carlos Sainz going from you know, shifting around, from moving from the Red Bull setup and then going to Renault, and Toro Rosso getting the Honda engines, and then Red Bull basically being able to evaluate Renault engines and Honda engines in each one of their teams. It was a kind of a strange situation, but, you know, I agree with what Ross Brawn had to say. And, well, let's just hear what he had to say. And it was a quote, "People say that they made a big mistake in getting rid of Honda, but I think, funnily enough, they almost needed it to do that, to recognize what they needed to do with the team. They were blaming Honda all the time, and I think they would recognize now that wasn't true. That wasn't everything. And in getting rid of Honda and getting a benchmark, they recognized they had to do something with the team. I don't know how they would have come to that conclusion unless they put an engine in the back of the car that somebody else was racing and somebody else was doing well with. In doing that, they recognized then that they have some bigger problems other than just the engine. They had to make some changes. And I think that they've made some very sensible changes, end quote. And I think that in those couple of sentences there, that Braun really nails it on the head, because even in the times in that 3 years when they had the Honda power, there was still like a little bit, you could almost call it arrogance. I think that's a fair way to describe it. When they had all the problems with Honda power and with the car, they kept saying, well, you know, it's not the engine. We got one of the best chassis in Formula One. There's nothing wrong with the car. It's all down to the engine. It's all down to Honda. It's their problem. And this was repeated a number of times. And excuse me, in a number of different ways, but that was basically the way that it was summed up. And it's, you know, I think nobody really likes to ask themselves hard questions or look at themselves in such a very frank and honest and critical way. But once they did that, and they did get away from Honda that first year with Renault, I mean, there was obviously an improvement. The Renault may not have been, say, as powerful as the Mercedes or the Ferrari power units, but it was definitely an improvement on what they had with Honda in 2018. It was more reliable, but it also exposed some of the problems that they had with the car. And now that they couldn't sit there and blame all the problems that they were having on the Honda engine, then I think that all of a sudden, well, oh, okay, well, things aren't quite what we expected, but, you know, it can't be us, or can it? And obviously they asked themselves those more difficult questions, but that's why I really have a lot of respect for the job that Zach Brown has done. I mean, he's come in, he seems to me to be a very matter-of-fact, very sensible, very down-to-earth and focused kind of guy. And rather than trying to do everything else or doing everything himself, he's appointed key people in key positions, like getting Jill DeFerrin in, ex-racing driver, to be their sporting director, whatever his official title is. James Key, who came in as the technical director from Toro Rosso. And then you have Andrea Seidel, the team principal, who's used to be the head of the Porsche LMP1 project. They parted ways with Patrick Bouliet a couple of years. So I mean, he made some difficult choices, and he just brought in some right people. And I think that ultimately, I think that's a sign of a good leader, making the hard calls and then and doing the things that ultimately improve your organization, and bringing in and delegating these responsibilities rather than trying to do it all yourself. And I mean, we see him all the time during race weekends. I mean, sometimes he's on the broadcast, you know, talking to the, you know, the commentary crew on Sky Sports, but you also see him walking around into the pits or on the pit wall. I mean, he's a very hands-on kind of guy, but at the same time, he's not trying to do it all himself. And I think slowly but surely, we've seen those decisions that he's made, and those people that he's appointed. It's like planting seeds in your garden. You know that something's going to grow, but you can't go in and interfere and poke your finger in there, overwater it or over-fertilize it or whatever it is. I'm just kind of making guesses here. I'm not really the greatest gardener, but you get my point, right? Is that you just, at some point, you have to back off. You have to trust those people. If you trusted them enough or believed in them enough to bring them into your organization in the first place, you have to step back and let them do what they need to do. And I think that's why we saw a fairly substantial gain in what they did, a fairly big step forward from 2018 to 2019 with McLaren. But having said that, and this was echoed in what James Key was just saying, and also I think Ross Brawn as well, is just that even though that they have improved, there still is quite a ways to go before they can catch up to the top three. And whether they can do that this year, well, that's a $64,000 question, but certainly it'll be a fascinating situation to watch and see how much ground that they can make up this year. Anyways, time for a very quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back right after this break, and we're going to shift our focus onto Ferrari and the brand new SF1000. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. And we're going to talk about Ferrari for the next little while. The SF1000s. Yes, that's their contender for this year. It was shown the light of day in a fairly glitzy and glamorous and very Ferrari type launch earlier this year. And last year we went from the SF90. Now we're making quite a big jump here to the SF1000, but it's all in good faith, well-intentioned maybe, but anyways, it is named in honor of Ferrari being set to participate in its 1000th race in the World Championship this year. So that is an amazing accomplishment. So it that is something. I mean, wow, I've just got, as I'm talking here, that's starting to sink in as I look at my notes. But yeah, 1,000 races in the World Championship, that is an amazing accomplishment. You think that all the things that they've done in Formula One over the years, I mean, it's been a very long time since they won a world championship, but still, to be around that long and all the pantheon of drivers, I mean, iconic drivers that have driven for that team, and some of the beautiful and incredible racing cars that they've designed and built over the year really is an accomplishment that is second to none, really. It really is fantastic. Anyways, it's a nice looking car. It's again, much like the McLaren, the MCL 35 was very similar looking to the MCL 34 of last year. Same very much with the Ferrari from last year and this year. Again, haven't really had a chance to really sit down and look into it too much in depth. But again, they're going with this similar sort of matte red scarlet paint job, and it looks really, really nice. I mean, the livery itself is basically unchanged. But Ferrari chief executive Louis Camilleri had to say, quote, "It is clearly going to be an interesting year, tough competition, a long season, but also an important season because in parallel, we have to create and develop a completely new car in line with the regulations that will govern F1 in 2021 and beyond. So the team is going to be very, very busy. I have every confidence in our women and men, their creativity, their discipline and determination, and above all, the work ethic they have had before, which is the hallmark of this company, one instilled upon us by our founder, Enzo Ferrari. Mattia Binotto and his team are doing a great job, and we look forward to success going forward." So they were the first team to really show off their car in real life, and Haas, which is obviously one of their customer teams, they did release some pictures of the VF20 last week, and Mercedes, they kind of teased us a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about Mercedes a bit later on, and that's why it's been a bit of a funny launch season so far. Mercedes said they did show off their new livery for the 2020 season. But using last year's car, but whatever, it is what it is. Anyways, it is exciting to see, but the Ferrari, they've gone in a completely different direction. They've decided to go for what they're calling an extreme design for this year, aimed at maximum downforce, which is completely different from last year. Anyways, Mattia Binotto had to say, quote, "Certainly the regulations remain stable, so it is difficult to transform completely the car. The starting point is last year's car, the SF90, but certainly we're all extreme on concepts as much as we could go. We try to go for maximum aero performance and try to maximize downforce level. So the entire car, the monocoque, the power unit layout, the gearbox has really been packaged to have a narrower, slim body shape. I think that's quite visible. We all work on components. The suspension has been designed to have greater flexibility when being on the racetrack, so we can adapt the setup to whatever suits the drivers and the circuit. We put down a lot of effort to keep the weight down. We worked a lot on the power unit, not only for the packaging, but we work on each single component to cope as well with the changing technical regulations, where oil consumption will be reduced by 50%. It may look very similar to last year, but believe me, it is a completely different to last year. A lot of concepts are very extreme on the car. And Sebastian Vettel, one of the drivers for the team, he called the new car, the SF1000, an incredible achievement. So Seb, very high on it. He had to say the following, quote, "We had the opportunity to obviously see it a little bit before and to have also a direct comparison with last year's car. And you can really spot the differences, especially when it comes to the packaging. In the back of the car, everything sits a lot tighter. So there's a lot of work behind that because that's not so easy. So we found some clever solutions to be able to achieve it. I can't wait to drive it because obviously that's more exciting than just looking at it." And of course, winter testing gets underway in Barcelona next week. So really, we're almost right there. It really is exciting to see. Anyways, one of the things that have come out about the SF 1000 is that the Ferrari has ruled out switching to a Mercedes style front wing, and this is despite the desire and what they've already put into practice to add more downforce to the car this year. And well, last year, I mean, that was the big thing. They went for this low downforce model on the car, and even though the car was blindly fast on the straightaways, we saw that at Spa, we saw that at Monza, you know, all these oil burning allegations and things like that notwithstanding, I mean, in a straight line, the car really was that much faster. But get to some of the more tighter technical tracks that require more downforce, and they really struggled. They were able to figure out here and there, but most part, I mean, they really got the concept wrong. Anyways, Mattia Binotto had the following to say about the wing, quote, "This one maybe is not the final one, but certainly is our baseline for the start, and we will bring it to winter testing. We will not change our concept. It will remain like that, even on whatever we may test later on. I think it is the right concept for us. I think we improved a lot the downforce, not only through the wing, but if you look at the car itself, turning vanes especially. I think quite a lot of high complexity, I would say. The entire car, the slimmer car makes as well the back of the car and the diffuser work better. So finally, I think overall downforce has certainly increased." So really a big change in philosophy for Ferrari this year. And well, honestly, I'm intrigued to see whether or not they can make this work. And I think this is a real season where they need to turn it around sooner rather than later. I mean, last year was a very, very disappointing season for Ferrari. I mean, there were a number of things to be, I guess, positive about. Obviously, Charles Leclerc was a revelation. I mean, I think there were questions, no doubt, when he moved up from Sauber Alfa Romeo after 2018. I mean, why wouldn't there be? I mean, you got this young fellow going to the most famous racing team in the entire world, not just Formula One. And despite the success that this guy has had in other levels of motorsport, and in a very impressive rookie campaign with Sauber Alfa Romeo a couple of years ago, I mean, being young, I mean, that was a fairly small resume. I mean, let's be honest about it. But I mean, Charles came up to Ferrari, and he was impressive right off the very bat. I mean, if you go back to the opening race of the year in Australia, I mean, I know that he finished fifth, but I mean, the team orders had a lot to do with that, and he had to hold behind Sebastian Vettel. So I mean, that was limited in what he could do. But I mean, go to Bahrain, I mean, he was fast in Bahrain. He should have won that race, right? If it wasn't, for the car letting him down right towards the end. And by gosh, he was sure was lucky that those two Renault cars had a simultaneous, well, that was still weird how they both simultaneously retired right at the end of the race. But that really did help Charles keep a podium at least. And I mean, he was impressive basically all year long. I mean, there were some moments too that were disappointing. Obviously, in Monaco, he didn't get to race and compete in that, but that was more down to the car rather than him. Baku, that was a disappointment when he just he crashed into the wall just by that really tight entry into the corner, that chicane that goes around the castle there. So that was disappointing. But all in all, I mean, Charles, he just got better as the year went on. And when he won in Monza, I mean, gosh, like, was that not one of those, I think, milestone moments that, I mean, we all knew he was good, but when he won that race and he held off the Mercedes for so long, it was like, yeah, this guy's legit. Yeah, we all knew that this guy has got some talent, but to do what he did and to win that race in the way that he did, I think that made Charles Leclerc a rock star in the eyes of many people. But anyways, let's move along now. And this is kind of an interesting one. This is something that we talked about a couple of weeks ago when we did the big group podcast here with Mark and Gil of Flash F1 and Tim Haraney of TSN Sports. And Tim had some interesting insight on this, and that, well, I'm going to now bring out exactly what that is. And this is a build on that conversation, that Vettel is still apparently the first choice for Ferrari over even Lewis Hamilton for 2021. And Tim said at the time that based on some of the conversations that he's had in Formula One, some of the insiders that he regularly speaks to, that Ferrari still think very highly of Sebastian Vettel, and they would like to keep him for 2021. And so that is, it's interesting, right? And I mean, I've talked about it, I know, over the past couple of months, and speculated on what might happen to Sebastian Vettel, whether or not he may stay or not stay with Ferrari after this year, after his contract is up. And I've kind of tended to lean more to the side that maybe he won't stay with Ferrari for 2021. But I'm really starting to go that other way now and think that that maybe he will. And I mean, he's obviously had a very difficult, year and a half, right? I would say since the second half of the 2018 season. 2019 wasn't as bad as the end of that 2018 campaign, but there were relatively few moments to really write home about. He was extremely frustrated the way that things went for him at the Canadian Grand Prix with that 5 second time penalty he was given for that, what do they call it now, illegal entry into the track, or dangerous re-entry when he went off in that chicane in turn three and then came back right in front of Lewis Hamilton. But you know, it is what it is. I mean, that controversy we talked about at length at the time. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that even though that Seb has had his issues over the past year and a half, is that he's still relatively young. I mean, he's still only in his early 30s. I mean, he's younger than Lewis Hamilton. And if Lewis has a bunch of years to go yet, I mean, you got to think that Seb's still got a lot left in the tank as well. And I certainly think that he does. I don't think you go from being a quadruple world champion to being completely washed up and completely have lost the plot. I think that last year's car was really, really difficult to drive, and I don't think it really suited his style at all. I mean, just go and look at the incident that he had at Monza, the way that he went off. I think that in 2018, maybe the pressure did get to him a couple of times there. I mean, when you look at some of the preventable clashes that and collisions that he had with other drivers, that was more, I think, on him rather than obviously than the car. I mean, think about how he came together with Lewis on the first lap of the Italian Grand Prix. Think about the multiple clashes he had with Max. That's on the driver, right? But last year, I mean, I know that he had his incidents as well, but when you go back to Montreal, I mean, that, I think that's a guy that was obviously really pushing it, because I mean, that was a race that was just between Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton that day. I mean, Charles Leclerc was about 15 seconds behind Lewis at that point. I mean, he was there. I mean, he was good enough for a podium, but he was never going to push Hamilton or Vettel for the lead in that race, no matter what happened. When you look at that incident with Sebastian when he went off the track in Montreal, I mean, you go into that little chicane, that little flick to the right, and then they flick back to the left again. It's just that when under braking, and obviously he's pushing it, he's braking as late as he can, that the car just, you know, it wobbled on him, and he just wasn't able to keep it on the track, and he had to go off onto the grass. It was just what he was left. That's the only option he was left with, right? And And that's what's unfortunate. But that was similar to the little spin and incident he had in Bahrain. And then when you think about what happened to Monza as well, it looked like at times that the car just was too nervous in the hands of Sebastian Vettel. So I certainly hope that the SF1000 works better for him and for Charles Leclerc, because it was... I mean, we can go and have this debate again ad nauseum, really, just about Mercedes last year. I mean, they got off to an extremely quick start, and that's really what won the championship for them, for Lewis Hamilton, Mercedes, that is. But Ferrari and Red Bull, it just took them too long to really get their act together and get their cars figured out and really get them working properly. And by the time they're able to really challenge for races and be more competitive when compared to Mercedes, it was too little too late. I mean, the first time we saw somebody else other than Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas win a race was Max Verstappen winning in Austria. And I mean, we're already into summer, in the beginning of summer. And well, I mean, that's, what was it, 8 or 9 races that they won in a row before Max won that race. So there's a lot of points that were put into the pockets of Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas, and Mercedes on the constructor side. And by that point, nobody was going to catch them. I mean, let's be realistic about it. I mean, they were just too far up the road, too far ahead, that unless there was going to be some sort of unparalleled, unprecedented meltdown of form and reliability, that nobody from Ferrari or Red Bull were going to catch up to Mercedes at that point. It was very much that the other teams were probably going to win some races here and there, which they did. And it was basically Mercedes just kind of had to keep doing what they were doing, and the points would eventually come. And it was just a foregone conclusion that they were going to win the championship, which they obviously did. Anyways, it is just going back to Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel and just that whole situation at Ferrari. I mean, it is a fascinating situation. It is interesting to think about and to speculate and comment on, because you have these stories about Lewis has been meeting with them before Christmas, and you start to think about it, just like all the records and the fact that he can tie Schumacher this year, or he could, and if he does so, then it just makes that whole sort of almost dream scenario, really, that he could go and break Schumacher's records and do so for Ferrari. But I really keep going back, and this is one comment that's really sort of stuck in my mind from a couple of months ago, and this is prior to the announcement of Charles Leclerc signing an extension or a new contract with Ferrari, and also with Max re-upping until 2023 with Red Bull and all that. Well, obviously, Christian Horner is a bit of an inside track on this sort of thing. Obviously, he knew at that point what was going on between Red Bull himself and Max Verstappen. So he must have known that he expected that Max would re-sign at that point. But I do just think of his comments that he feels that by the time it was all sorted out, that it would remain the status quo with the top three teams for 2021. So Hamilton and Bottas at Mercedes, Albon and Verstappen at Red Bull, and Vettel and Leclerc at Ferrari. And I mean, now that we've seen Leclerc and Verstappen jump into the contract and the silly season and get that over and done with long in advance of anyone else, really, I think throws some weight to Horner's prediction that those six guys are going to stay in those seats for 2021. And, well, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, Sebastian Vettel, it seems now that there's speculation coming out, and Binotto saying, hear what Binotto had to say. Quote, I want to reply on that a different way. I think Seb is our first choice at the moment, and that's obviously, it's something we are discussing with him and we're continuing to discuss, but he's certainly our first option, our preference at the moment. That is interesting, because he did go on to say that Hamilton was something that Ferrari has, quote, cannot considering at the moment. So that is, I think, quite telling. Who knows what these conversations that he had. And if you're Hamilton, I think that as a racing driver and also as a businessman, I think you have to explore all the options that you have available to you. And who knows, maybe it was just the opportunity to get together and just talk and sit down and maybe just a sort of an icebreaker more than anything else. But the more that I think about it, even though that you do kind of have this sort of almost fairy tale scenario of Hamilton going to Ferrari and breaking all the records there, I just can't see the guy leaving Mercedes at this point in his career. I mean, he just seems so integrated, so part of the team there, and just the focal point of everything. I mean, that combination of Toto Wolff as the team principal, Lewis Hamilton as the number one driver, and all the engineers and the all the people in the factory and the pits. I mean, it just it's worked so good for so many years. Why would you change anything of that? I mean, ultimately, I mean, only Lewis knows what he wants, but I just would find it difficult to see that situation come to unfold and see Lewis move on to Ferrari. I just feel that that he's going to stay with Mercedes for the rest of his career. I mean, the one that I do find interesting is, though, and we'll talk a little bit more about Danny Ricciardo, and just as we're coming into a break here, but I'm still not convinced that that Valtteri Bottas might stay with Mercedes for 2021. So that's why we'll really have to keep an eye on him this year. I mean, he's had some good seasons with them. I mean, last year was a good year for him. I mean, he's good for a couple of wins here and there. Well, in 2018, maybe a little bit different. That was not his best season. It was disappointing and frustrating for him, obviously, for that year. But I mean, he was good this year. I mean, he is almost, like I say, the ideal teammate to Hamilton, because I mean, he's not really been in the position to really push him or fight for race wins here and there. And I don't think that Valtteri is the kind of guy to get into a situation that we saw between Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. I think that Valtteri had, I just don't get that impression for him. So we'll have to keep our eye on that and see how the results go for him. I think that if he struggles, then of course, obviously that's going to put more pressure on him and make the scenario that he returns in 2021 less likely. But I think that on the flip side of that, if he has a season in 2019, similar to what he had last year in 2020, that's similar to the year they had last year in 2019, then that just strengthens his case to come back to Mercedes again in 2021. Anyways, time for one more break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Let's talk a little bit now about Honda and Red Bull. This was an interesting one here, and this is one I found on motorsport.com, and it's titled The Dramatic Shift Honda Needs for F1 2020. And this is an article that was written by Adam Cooper, and he's just talking a little bit about the potential and that we saw with Honda, with Toro Rosso in 2018, and the big turnaround that we've seen in Honda's form since the early days of their program with McLaren in 2015. And that's why, you know, I still always feel like Honda is the newcomer to the V6 turbo hybrid era, but they were only a year behind. I mean, 2014 we just had Mercedes, Ferrari, and Renault, and then but the thing was, Honda, they really got in on the development on the R&D side of these V6 turbo hybrid engines much later than everyone else, because by the time we got to 2014, everybody else had been working on these power units for a good number of years, and so they were all at a similar level. But Honda really fast-tracked everything like that, and obviously we saw the results of a lot of that program that was rushed into being to a certain extent. And as I said earlier off the top of the show, it really was it was tough to watch. Anyway, so just going back to this article by Adam Cooper, he feels that in 2020, Honda will have to, what he says, raise their game a notch. They did make big gains in 2019, but you know, the both in terms of performance and reliability. But according to Adam Cooper, he still feels that that reliability is the area where there's some questions still might be lingering for Honda. And certainly I do agree with that. I think that that they certainly have come a long way in a relatively short amount of time in the last 24 months compared to the previous 3 years with McLaren. But I think that was bound to happen sooner or later. The more miles that, that they got on these engines, the more years and time that they had in Formula One. I mean, Honda's just too good. I mean, they're too much of a well-established car manufacturer. They have a long history in racing. They have a long history in Formula One. And that's why when they had all those troubles with the McLaren, that's what I was always wondering, is that they will get it right at some point. It was always the question of how long will McLaren want to stick it out, and well, are they going to get it right with them, or are they going to get it right with somebody else? And ultimately, that it was the latter, because McLaren decided to pull the plug. They go to Honda. Sorry, Honda goes to Toro Rosso for the 1 year in between, with you know, the possibility to supply engines to Red Bull. And so far, I mean, it really looks like they made a good switch, right? And if you think. And you go back and you look at the results that that Honda had, sorry, that Red Bull had in 2018. I mean, all the time in this V6 turbo hybrid era, they were good for several podiums every year, maybe a win or two here or there, and that's the way it more or less was. And then you had that evaluation year where they really looked at the Renault engines in the back of their own cars, the Hondas and the Toro Rosso, really compare them and look at that data and make an informed choice. And I have to admit, I was maybe skeptical to, or maybe not skeptical, but certainly I was really questioning whether or not they made the right decision. Obviously, they have all the data, but that's why I found it so fascinating. And I think it was about the time of the Canadian Grand Prix in 2018 is when they made the announcement that they were going to be switching to Honda. But that's why I was always wondering, well, then, you know, this is a very bold move, but they've obviously they've seen something that they liked in the data and the numbers that they were getting out of the test data and the races and qualifying, whatever they were doing from, with Toro Rosso. But Honda, they made an equally bold, I mean, if Red Bull made a bold choice to switch to Honda for 2019, it was also an equally bold move from Honda to come out and say that now that we're going to supply Red Bull for with engines in 2019, that we're going to put them on a par and same level that they were at with Renault. And so they can achieve similar results, which is basically what we had last year. If anything, I mean, they seemed like they were a little bit better, a little bit further ahead. I mean, the results were more or less the same, but I just had the impression that it just looked to me that they were just a little bit ahead. So that's why it's going to be really interesting to watch and see that, whether or not Honda can continue on this course of development, whether they can still find gains in performance, whether they can knock off and defeat any questions about reliability in their engines, and then really combine that with Red Bull and see whether or not the RB16, their new car for this year, can really step up to the challenge. And then Red Bull have come out and say that they've had to change their philosophy, the way of doing things, so they can be more competitive right off the bat, rather than sort of working up into it over the course of the opening phases of the season, and which obviously that's where you lose a lot of points. We were talking about just now before the break, and that's why it is going to be very, very interesting to see how they keep moving forward this year as a team, as a partnership in Red Bull and Honda. Anyways, Honda themselves say that they are quite happy with the progress of that they've made on their engines over the year. And when they were asked by motorsports.com, Christian Horner had to say, quote, they look quite happy. The engine made constant progress throughout the last year. The latest engine is the next step in that evolution. They've done plenty of mileage on their dynos. We've obviously been working very closely with them and the integration of the engine into the chassis. They share that motivation, desire of competitiveness, and to really build on the three wins that they achieved last year and all the stuff that came with it. They're very, very focused on making that next step. The turnaround that they've achieved has been phenomenal when you consider where they were 5 years ago and where they are now. That's hugely impressive. And I think that last year was an absolutely crucial year for them to get some results. I mean, that's why I was saying just now that I think that was a bold statement of them to say that they were going to keep Red Bull on the same level that they were in 2018 with Renault, where they did manage to win the odd race here or there. And I thought, wow, you know, they've really got to deliver now. And they did. And I think that was very important that they did win those three races, because the longer that it went without getting a car win a race with Honda Power, I just had the feeling that the longer that that barren patch, that drought, whatever you want to call it, continued, that it would be more likely that these guys would at some point just say, you know what, it's costing us a ton of money to be here. You know, we're not winning any races. Is it really worth our while to stay in Formula One? And I think that even just one win last year was a big achievement for them. But to win three after it was all said and done, I think was even better. So, like I say, I made this comment before over the past year or so. But there certainly seems to be a much better synergy, a much better working relationship between Red Bull and Honda than it was previously between Red Bull and Renault, which, you know, seems kind of funny to say, because I mean, this is a partnership that won multiple world championships together before this turbo hybrid era. And Renault never really quite got it right coming into this this new formula back in 2014, and those, you know, the gap between them just slowly grew over time. And, even going back as far as 2014, Horner was making comments just about how he was, disappointed or frustrated in the lack of power that the Honda engines had. And, certainly, you know, that just kind of grew over time to the point where, you know, it became a little bit more pointed, a little bit more critical each and every time. And then, I think it was a Cyril Abiteboul, team principal at Renault, basically at one point said, you know, he can say what he can say. He wants to say, you know, we tuned him out long ago. Anyways, certainly there's nothing like that at the moment, anyways, between Honda and Red Bull. And obviously, when you're winning, people are a lot happier. Anyways, time for one final break here on the show. Don't go away. We'll be right back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to Scuderia F1. We're going to slowly but surely start cleaning it up and shutting it down now. As I was saying, we've had some launches this week. Mercedes teased us a little bit by releasing the new livery on their car using last year's car. And that was partially due to the fact that they've got a new sponsor in Ineos. That's a five-year deal. Other than that, the car, very similar to the designs and the livery that they've had on the car over the past several years, but this Ineos features a sort of a red and sort of a transitioning into a black kind of swoosh, especially on the top of the airbox. Also features on the inside of the front wings on the end plates there, so that a little bit extra red. Don't really see a lot of red on the Mercedes cars. You get a little bit in the, because Tommy Hilfiger is a sponsor, so you got the red, white, and navy blue logo just on the front nose of the car, just behind the where the front wing is. And then you have the single solitary red star to honor the recently departed Niki Lauda. But I mean, overall, it looks really, really nice. So we look forward to seeing what it looks like on the W11, which will be released here very, very soon. But anyways, just sticking with the Mercedes now, Toto Wolff said that a report of an imminent departure from Formula One for Mercedes Mercedes is what he calls, quote, nonsense. And he says that the focus of Daimler, which is their parent company, is remaining in Formula One for the long term. So this is a story that's been going around and sort of pops its head up every week or two. And it comes basically because there is a new Concord agreement between everyone else in Formula One and all the teams and Formula One itself. But Mercedes hasn't signed up yet. So that's a big thing. So it leads to a lot of speculation. But I mean, look at the writing between the walls. I mean, if they knew that they were going to be pulling out, why would they be signing a 5-year sponsorship deal with a major sponsor in Ineos, which is a chemical company, by the way. Anyways, Toto Wolff had the following to say, quote, like always, we are in this for the long term. F1 provides a great marketing platform for our brand. This is what we do. We build race cars and we build road cars. F1 is the halo platform for hybrid engineering. That is something that is not communicated enough because it was talked down at the beginning of the V6 hybrid era. And that is something we should really put more emphasis on. In respect with all the things that are out there in the media, we like the platform, but at the same time, we're in a negotiation with the rights holder, and these things need to be sorted out. But the partnership is clearly something that indicates our wish to continue our successful journey in F1. Yeah, I think that I think that says it for itself. I think he's pretty plain and pretty to the point, pretty much to the point that, there's still some things that they need to sort out, some things that they don't like. There's still ongoing discussions, but they want to be there. They've signed another major sponsor as an indication of that. And well, watch this space. I would be very, very shocked if they were to walk away right now. I mean, I think that just based from a purely sporting point of view, it's a bunch of people that love to go racing. I mean, it seems every time that they win a race, they seem genuinely excited about that. So I guess we'll just have to watch and wait and see what the news brings us. Anyways, apparently Renault and Mercedes have an agreement about what secrets Esteban Ocon can bring over to the French team this year. Of course, last year he was the reserve driver at Mercedes before being announced as a Renault driver in the latter part of 2019, taking the seat vacated by Nico Hülkenberg alongside Danny Ricciardo. Anyways, Toto Wolff had to say that, I like this one, he says that Ocon is a cousin of the Mercedes family today. Anyways, he had to say that Ocon does obviously, I mean, he learned a lot of stuff at Mercedes, and he said that he's mindful, unlike some of the technical staff, drivers do not put on gardening leave when they leave teams. I mean, obviously there's non-disclosure things, confidentiality things that you can't really divulge to other teams. I mean, there's trades secrets. Anyways, Ocon had to say, quote, I come out of there a lot stronger than I was, with a lot more knowledge on the technical side, but also the other aspects of the organization, the way they see things in different conditions, the way they behave in any situation. I had an eye on all of that, which is completely different, even if I was driving, So definitely it has helped me. Of course, this year I was trying to give to some extent some of that. You have to be a professional always, not to give all the secrets because the engineers, they have to be a year out before coming back to another team. It's not the case for a driver. But I still take things a lot within limits. I took stuff here, which both teams agreed. And yeah, so far it's been good. I was much involved in the development of this year's car. So now it's exciting times because you don't see it as much here, but it's pretty different. Since a couple of years, the guys at the factory, they say it's probably the biggest step since 3 or 4 years. And certainly I hope so. I mean, just based on that quote from Esteban Ocon, that they really feel that this year's car, the RS20, is a real step forward. And they really have been a bit of a frustrating team to watch because they sort of really did make some progress after they bought out Lotus, but they've really stagnated. And the last year's car, the RS19, for me was a real disappointment. They just really weren't all that competitive. And I think that this year will be a crucial year for for them. I mean, this is another team where there's been some things coming out here or there that maybe they're not going to stick around in Formula One for the long term. But I think it's really more on them. I mean, they just haven't been able to get it right. So whether or not they can get it right and have a more competitive car this year, that really remains to be seen. Because we've heard similar statements from them before, every now and again, that oh yeah, well we've made a lot more progress on the engine over the past X number of months than we have in the past Y number of years, for example. We've heard things like this before, and then the results just haven't really come along. But anyways, they also believe that 2020 form alone won't be enough to keep Danny Ricciardo there for 2021, and they're being really sort of cautious and closed about their chances for this year, aiming for a top four. I mean, they had top four in 2018. This year they were well behind McLaren and a lot of the other teams. I mean, they just they weren't on that same level. But that's why I still think it was a real risk and a real surprise that Danny Ricciardo decided to go there. I mean, I still remember when he made that announcement that he'd be going there for 2019, and that came out in the summer break the year before, and I was on vacation myself, and I remember sitting out in the garden at the hotel we were staying at the time, and I was just kind of flipping through my phone, going through my timeline and Twitter, and I saw that little video that he posted to his Twitter account, and I was really surprised at the time, obviously, and I was really wondering whether or not it would be a positive career move for Danny Ricciardo. I mean, you got to look at everything. I think you got to take it a little bit in perspective. I mean, he's only been there for a relatively short amount of time, but having said that, professional athletes in any sport, once you get to the top, I mean, you sometimes think about these guys that have been around forever and ever and ever, and that really isn't the case. I mean, the average pro, whatever the sport might be, they don't really have a very long shelf life there, and it really is the really small minority of drivers or players and men and women in any sport that really stick around for the long term. So having one bad year is one thing, but Ricciardo can't really afford too many of them. I mean, obviously he's going to be like eyeing some of these seats that may come up elsewhere. Ferrari is obviously not set in stone for 2021, despite the noise and things that they've made about wanting to retain Sebastian Vettel. Obviously that second seat at Mercedes is not confirmed for 2021 either. So if you're Danny Ricciardo, you're probably looking at one of those. I mean, I don't think we'll ever see him back at Red Bull again. I think that's that chapter is closed. But I still understand why he made the switch and why he would go to Renault, where he would be more of a player, if you will, rather than sort of being in the in the shadow of Max Verstappen, if you want to call it that, because whether it was going to be explicitly said or not, that was always going to be Max Verstappen's team. And I think that Danny felt by maybe going somewhere else that he may have some opportunities to be more of a number one driver. I don't think that they ever really came out and said at Renault that Ricciardo or Hulkenberg was the number one guy. But I think that whether it was explicit or not at Red Bull, I think it was pretty obvious that the focus was on Max Verstappen, who's proved that he's got all the characteristics and traits to be a Formula One world champion at one point. I mean, Ricciardo's a very good driver. I mean, we've seen him win a number of races over the course of his career so far in a Red Bull that wasn't always the most competitive or quickest car on the track. So I mean, props to him for what he's achieved so far. But I don't think he's a Max Verstappen. I mean, it'd be cool again to see them race head to head. I mean, he was able to achieve similar results and similar things to Max, but whether or not Ricciardo has what it takes to be consistent race winner, I think obviously he has to do a lot about the car, and whether or not he's got it in him to be a world champion, I think that's a big question that may or may not be answered one of these days. Who knows? We'll wait and see. Anyways, sticking now a little bit with Renault, they justified the decision to have no car at their launch because they didn't want to present something which they called fake. I guess we've heard about fake news. What about fake cars? Anyways, Cyril Beetleboul, team principal or managing director at Renault F1. He had to say, quote, "If anything, we are much more on schedule than we were last year. You may remember that last year we invited you guys to come to Enstone, and actually I mentioned how late we were, and that was a fact. And probably it was also something that impacted the reliability at the start, because when you are late, you are reacting. It is all about trying to catch a train that's gone away. So this year we are ahead of schedule. After last year, I read what you wrote, and I read what people say about what you write about the pictures we post, and I got extremely frustrated from people, you know, really reacting to the cars as if they were the real thing. But actually, no one is capable of presenting a true car. If your team is on schedule, you don't have a car waiting here for a couple hours or days. Your car is built and going straight to Barcelona. That is an optimized schedule. So on that basis, our only option was to have a fake car, a show car, altered to look like this year's car, but that is a waste of money and the results will frankly be below optimal." People always look at, interpret that based on that. So rather than that, no car for anyone interested in the car, look at the pictures next week. So, you know, whatever. It is what it is. And, you know, honestly, I have no problem with that. Even like Alfa Romeo and Williams going to do their car launches at Barcelona, you know, before they start testing next week. I'm perfectly fine with that. You know, it probably isn't a very F1 thing to do. I mean, Ferrari had a big fancy car launch, but I guess that's kind of the Ferrari way. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, let your car do the talking on the track. Let the car do the talking on Sunday afternoon. I mean, the old saying, well, I guess it's money talks and BS walks, but I guess the same thing could be said too, you know, results talk and BS walks. You know, if you can't walk the walk, don't talk the talk. So, you know, what's the point of having a big launch like that? I mean, I don't really, I mean, it's cool, but for me, it's not a must. So yeah, I mean, if they're just going to release pictures and just get on with the testing, I mean, they got to focus on priorities. And I think that's more important. You know, why go through all the expense and the hassle of having a big release on basically what's just a dressed up, mock-up of a car anyways, when you should be focusing time, energy, and resources on getting the car ready, getting it, getting it off to Barcelona, getting, focusing on what you're going to do on the track, because it's going to be the first time you're going to be able to shake the car down, learn on whether or not the car performs as was expected when it was designed, get the feedback from the drivers, let the engineers do what they need to do. And that to me is much more important than some fancy car launch. Anyways, just sticking with the RS20, Renault has decided to steer clear of going for a total overhaul on their 2020 car, despite the disappointments that they had last year. Cyril Abiteboul had to say, quote, "This year we decided to take a bit of a different approach. The regulations are stable, so it was offering a fantastic opportunity to keep some elements of the car that have no direct responsibility towards the performance of the car. It doesn't mean that it's still the same car. It would not look very attractive, but what we have decided to do is focus on performance areas, and by doing that, you also work towards 2021. If you can be focused on 2020, then you have some extra capacity available for 2021. That is the logic behind what we have done. Whether it works or not, let's see in Melbourne on the Saturday." End quote. So there you go. Anyways, talking now a couple of items about some upcoming races before we close it down here. The Melbourne tram workers might, well, it could be an issue. Let's put it that way. There is a potential tram strike that is targeting the Australian Grand Prix in a couple of weeks' time. And there's a bitter pay dispute going on between Yarra Trams, the rail, tram, and bus union. And then more than 1,500 staff are set to go on strike during the 4 days of the Australian Grand Prix. And they're planning to halt their services between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, and between 12 and 4 on Saturday and Sunday. Obviously, key times during the day for qualifying the race. And apparently, I've never been there myself, but apparently the trams are just an important link servicing the Albert Park venue during the race weekend. And they have special shuttle services operating between the Central Business District in Melbourne and the different business or the different gates at the circus. Sorry, at the circus. It's getting late here. It's almost midnight. I apologize. Anyways, let's hope that doesn't come to pass, and hopefully that the tram company and the unions can come to an agreement, because obviously that's not a pleasant situation for the people involved, let alone the people that might be impacted, not just at the Grand Prix, but just life in general. Anyways, Romain Grosjean said that he's excited by the extraordinary plans for a Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia. He calls the project huge and extraordinary, and this is an all-new circus. I said that twice now in the space of a minute. Anyways, the brand new circuit is being designed by former F1 driver Alexander Wurz, and it could be on the calendar as early as 2023, as F1 and the officials in Saudi Arabia discuss and negotiate and see if they can work something out. So Grosjean is the only active driver that's actually been to the site to take a look around, and he was there last month alongside Nico Hülkenberg, Damon Hill, and David Coulthard. And Grosjean said, quote, "I hope that the project will go ahead and that it will progress as it should. The track that Alex has designed is great. He knows what we like and what we don't like. He's lucky to have this close relationship with us. He comes to us to ask us questions." I think that Alexander Wurz may have also been the head of the Racing Drivers Committee or whatever it is at one point. I always liked him. I thought he was he was a good character. Maybe not the flashiest F1 career, but kind of a cool project to be involved in designing a Formula One track. Anyways, just sticking with tracks, Ross Brawn, director of motorsport at Formula One, admits he was worried that Zandvoort would not be a good circuit for Formula One before they added the banking at the track. And Brawn was really quite skeptical about whether or not the layout would be good for Formula One racing. Anyways, he said that the unique solution of having a banked final corner, which almost turns into a straight, so it'll be really interesting to see how that turns out, said that really took away a lot of the worry that he had for it. And he had to say, quote, "I was worried about how we would make it a good race circuit until we had done that. But now we have a decent length of straight and going into the last corner, and then the first corner on the pit straight is going to be pretty exciting and a great crowd as well, I'm sure." So, yeah, I mean, there are some other parallels there that are put there. Was, the 2005 U.S. Grand Prix at Indianapolis. That's when, it had Bridgestone and Michelin tires. And, obviously Indianapolis being an oval has a lot of banked corners on it. And the Michelin running cars withdrew with that because there was a lot of concerns that the tires just wouldn't be able to handle the strain that would be put on it as, they went around. Because you had like part of the race was run on the oval itself, and then it would cut into the infield on a track through there, and then would come back out into one of the corners back onto the main straightaway again. And there was a lot of concern just about the stresses that were being put on the tires there. And it was really embarrassing, when all those Michelin running cars pulled off of the tracks, went back into the pits after the warm up lap. And I think we had a U.S. Grand Prix with like six cars or something like that, and people were standing there, and I remember clearly, people standing there in the stands, booing and showing this their displeasure, and rightly so. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. I think they wanted to put in some sort of temporary chicane or something just to sort of slow down the cars and kind of like even it out, but ultimately they decided not to do that. The Michelin guys decided, well, forget that, the risk is too great, we don't want to put anybody into danger, and therefore we're not going to run in the race. Anyways, I'm starting to run out of breath here. We've been sitting here for now over an hour, going an hour and 10 minutes, getting late here on a Thursday night into Friday morning. So I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you all very much for downloading and listening to the show. More car launches coming next week. We got winter testing coming, so it's going to be good to see some results come in and see what happens once the cars get on the track and see some times and see just how some of these cars kind of stack up against each other. So we are now making the first little steps into the 2020 World Championship, and the first race obviously just less than a month away. Can't wait for it to start. Anyways, if you want to get in touch, the best way to do so is on Twitter at ScuderiaF1 or send me an email at ScuderiaF1pod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Thanks very much for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you guys this time next week. Bye for now. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1pod@gmail.com.